Good morning, friends. Welcome into the Mike Allen Show. Wow, a little froggy in the throat this morning. That's all right. It's all good. God is good anyway, no matter your circumstances, and he never gives up on us. Continues to invite us, give us the opportunity to turn to him and to understand what it is to live in the light of his love and to be a living witness for him. So no matter where we are, that's one of the beautiful truths of the gospel, I think. Read the story of the one of the thieves crucified next to Jesus. You have two images there on either side of him. One who continues with what appears to be sort of final impenance, a refusal to turn from his wickedness and to seek salvation. The other sees in Jesus a dying man dying a criminal's death and yet has the audacious faith. Really one of the most remarkable statements of faith in the history of humanity. Remember me when you come into your kingdom. Your kingdom? What? Really? But a remarkable story of faith and a reminder that, as long as we've got breath in our bodies, there's still time for us to turn and to find grace and to find God's mercy. 573-4BREAD-4 if you want to be on the show today here on Breadbox Media. 573-4BREAD-4 if you've got a comment or a question, or you can email me mikeallenshow@gmail.com. I'll give you a more specific question of the day in the next segment. My guest next hour will be Lisa Duffy. Lisa Duffy, who has her own blog on the Patheos channel, A Million Unheard Souls. She also blogs at CatholicMatch.com. She's written extensively on issues related with divorced Catholics, trying to correct misconceptions, to uphold the truth of the Church about the indissolubility of marriage and what that means, but also having the mercy and tenderness to meet people where they are. And she herself, having been through a divorce, something she never imagined would be a part of her life, through the journey of receiving a declaration of nullity and then through marrying and having some children with her current husband, really has a great perspective. And we have her on once a month. And she's going to talk specifically today about what if you're the one who really didn't want the divorce and you also didn't want the annulment, because there are those folks, right? We sometimes forget that in the midst of our pastoral considerations. Of those who go through a divorce and who seek an annulment, what about those who find the whole idea of a declaration of nullity to be a slap in the face? They never wanted the marriage to end in the first place. They were abandoned. And then they see their spouse who abandoned them seeking to have their marriage, which they entered into in good faith, declared null. And so it brings a lot of difficult and hard feelings. Lisa will try to address those in the second half of the next hour. Also want to talk a little bit about the power of Josiah's Jumanji, one of Israel's great kings, and a discovery that was made that had the power unleashed, just like the board game, if you've seen the movie, and why Donald Trump and some evangelicals are asking the wrong question. Hope you had a good rest of the day yesterday after the program. I had the opportunity, the privilege, and the responsibility to speak as a contributor to a graveside funeral service for a former Methodist, a member of the church where I had been pastor before I became Catholic in 2005. We laid Lina Click to rest yesterday at the local cemetery, and I'll talk about it a little bit later in the program. I've always found it to be a heavy responsibility, but also a really singular privilege to be able to offer some words of hope, the words of the gospel, the words of God's mercy in the midst of death. And I'll talk about that a little bit later in the program. So I had that going on yesterday after the show. Then the rest of the day, I had a meeting or two, but pretty laid back. And then had the opportunity to take my two children who are home with me this week, because my wife and four of our children are off on a mission trip. Keep them in your prayers, by the way. Catholic Heart Work Camp. They have locations all around the country, really, every summer. Different week-long Heart Work Camp retreats where young people converge from different youth groups together, and they center around a common project. Usually there are home repairs and other things that need to be done in their communities, and the kids who come get an experience in short-term mission work, and they also have an opportunity to really deepen their Catholic faith. So they're off at Catholic Heart Work Camp. Keep them in your prayers. They'll be back Friday night. Won't be soon enough for me, but I've got my 10-year-old daughter and my 16-year-old son at home, so we went out and got us a little bite to eat last night. And I'm still going back and forth on this whole Raising Cane's versus Chick-fil-A. I know that's, for a person of faith, to put anyone in the same stratosphere as Chick-fil-A is probably borderline blasphemy. If you've never been to Raising Cane's, it's a restaurant that only serves chicken fingers. That's it. Chicken fingers. No variety. Not even nuggets. It's all chicken fingers, but they really are good and have an excellent dipping sauce. So I'm going to have to cut back today after really spoiling good eating last night. Anyway, I digress. Today, the feast day of Saints John Fisher and Thomas More. Every year this comes up, particularly here these last few years, we've been reminded as the United States bishops have instituted this fortnight for freedom. Fortnight, a word we've had to kind of dust off our old vocabulary shelves. Fortnight, I think, means 14 days. But they've always centered this fortnight for freedom with a particular focus on religious liberty, which has really been in the conversation the last, I would say, 5 to 10 years in ways that it really had not been largely for a long time. If you were to do word mapping, which some corporations do within their official documents, they kind of do an official count of words and types of words to see how, if you can discern the direction of their company, what is our priority, despite what our mission statement may say, what is it that we talk about the most? Word mapping. I always think it's a rather fascinating idea. I bet we'd learn a lot in our churches if we word mapped the conversations that went on in homilies, at parish council meetings, and finance meetings, and all the rest. Maybe even those conversations in the narthex. But certainly, word mapping in the U.S. among people of faith, particularly Christians of all stripes, Protestant and Catholic, but I think especially through the leadership of the bishops, this term religious liberty, religious freedom, has been more and more in conversation, trying to delineate out the difference between simply freedom of worship, in which one can, in the interior citadel of one's own heart, believe what they want to believe. You have that type of freedom of worship in North Korea, for heaven's sake, or Iran. You can privately, in the privacy of your own heart, believe what you want. This country has always espoused, really from the very first freedom mentioned in the First Amendment, freedom of religion, the freedom to practice one's faith in all its fullness in the culture. And during this fortnight for freedom, which I think started yesterday here, the U.S. bishops try to put the focus on that because there have been some usurpations or attempted usurpations, let's just say, of religious freedom. And certainly Saints John Fisher and Thomas More, good models or prototypes of what it means to stand for a particular truth at great cost and peril to one's own neck. St. John and Fisher and Thomas More, both executed by Henry VIII back in 1535 for their refusal to acquiesce on his desire for a declaration of nullity from his wife, Catherine of Aragon, so that he may enter into another marriage with Anne Boleyn, with the hopes of her providing him a male heir. The truth is, he was also ravaged by Anne Boleyn and already having an adulterous affair with her. But Henry VIII, in one of the great and sad ironies, who had once been proclaimed defender of the faith by the Pope, King Henry VIII basically decided to take the faith for himself, that he would become the head of the Church of England, that he would break ties with Rome. He saw what had been happening on the continent with Martin Luther and the Protestant Reformation, and I guess Henry VIII saw it as an opportune moment for him to get what he wanted. And for the vast majority of people in England, including the vast majority of those in the hierarchy and the clergy, they went along. They went along to get along, as you might say. But not St. John Fisher, for example. St. John Fisher, the Bishop of Rochester, from what I understand, the only bishop in England who would not acquiesce, who would not affirm Henry as the head of the Church of England, and who would not recognize his second marriage. The parallels, of course, between Fisher and John the Baptist, who stood as a public witness against the legitimacy of Herod's marriage. John the Baptist, who himself was beheaded because of his opposition after Herodias' daughter danced before the king and she asked for the head of John the Baptist on a platter. The parallel was not lost on Henry VIII, and he didn't want to give more fuel to the fire. That's why he had Fisher executed on the 22nd of June and didn't wait until after June 24th, which of course is the feast of the Nativity of St. John the Baptist. We'll talk more about Fisher and more a little bit later in the program. We'll be back with a question of the day. This is The Mike Allen Show. Minutes past the hour, you are back on the Mike Allen Show here on Breadbox Media. Breadbox Media, really the future of evangelization and the Catholic media across the digital stratosphere through streaming, through apps for your digital devices, through podcasting. Check it all out at breadboxmedia.com. Our full programming schedule and a variety of voices, perspectives, all looking at life through the Catholic faith, very down to earth, trying to avoid complicated jargon, trying to accompany each other. We're all on this path together, and really that's what Breadbox Media is all about. You can also listen to podcasts of your favorite programs if you happen to not catch all of this, or there's another one. Just go to breadboxmedia.com. You can click on the link. You can also go to Google Play. You can go to iTunes or to Podbean. You can subscribe to the program as well. Also become a friend of your favorite show through a small monthly donation. You can have exclusive online content. So check it all out at breadboxmedia.com. Always in doing my crack research staff, which includes three people. That's me, myself, and I. It's like I work for the Diocese of Lexington, Kentucky, you know. I'm the director of the Office of Family Life and Evangelization. People say, hey, does your office do that? I kind of look around. Yeah, that'd be me. Anyway, in my crack research staff, I discovered that on this day back in 1847, the first ring donut was supposedly created by Hanson Gregory. Evidently, they had had problems making donuts so that the interior part of the donut, the dough, fully cooked, right? Kind of a tricky thing. And so to alleviate the problem, Hanson Gregory had a brilliant idea. You know, necessity, the mother of invention, is that he took the middle out of the donut. In other words, made a hole in the donut. And thus we have that glorious bit of fried pastry that we have to this day. So I'm asking a question of the day. What is your favorite brand and flavor of donut? You know, maybe you make your own donuts. More power to you. Knock yourself out. You can tell us all about it. But for the most, you know, most of us, we go to some place like Krispy Kreme or Dunkin' Donuts maybe, or some local joint What is your favorite brand and flavor of donut? And then what is your accompanying beverage of choice? 573-4-BREAD-4, 573-4-BREAD-4. After asking difficult questions, question of the day the last couple days, I thought we'd come back to the wheelhouse of this listener base, and that is the appetite-oriented, simple, superficial question. So, which type donut do you prefer? And what is your beverage of choice? 573-4-BREAD-4. We've already gotten some takers on this question on Facebook. No surprise. You can also email me, MikeAllenShow@gmail.com, by the way. I like the line is that the Catholic comedian Jim Gaffigan has to say, you know why cops like donuts? Because everybody likes donuts. No question. That's for my friend Joan, retired officer Joan Root. Anyway, let's see. Carmen says Poppy's, which is a local donut place in Frankfort, Kentucky, where she's from. Sour cream with a cup of joe. Elizabeth says McGee's, that is a local place in Lexington, Kentucky. McGee's chocolate, black coffee, or water. Garnet says plain cake and black coffee. I'll share some a little bit later. But what about you? To me, it's hard to beat that hot light there at Krispy Kreme. When you can slide in there, the hot light is on. Man, I could put away probably five of those right now. They're almost a more substantial version of cotton candy. You know how cotton candy, you take a big bite and then it reduces to nothing? Well, those hot Krispy Kreme donuts, it's not unsatisfying like cotton candy can sometimes be, but it does when it's hot and then you take that bite of that donut. Oh, it's like it condenses in your mouth and becomes, I don't know, it's one step short of heaven. 573-4-BREAD-4, 573-4-BREAD-4. And please, do not message me and say, my life is so much happier since I gave up donuts. Good for you. Good for you. That's not for this show today. 573-4-BREAD-4. You can email me, MikeAllenShow@gmail.com. Well, I'm going to have to... Going to have to face my friend, my Argentinian friend, or Argentine, or Argentine, I'm not sure how you say it, friend sometime, Deacon Eduardo, who made me aware, you know, I had not really been paying attention to the Copa America, which is the big soccer tournament, I guess. Now, this is not a World Cup year. I think this is the halfway point until the next World Cup, which happens every 4 years in 2018. But this is, so the in the Americas. And you had the semifinals going on, of course. I think Colombia is playing Chile, and the U.S., in a surprise, after upsetting Ecuador, was playing Argentina last night. Now, Argentina is the number one ranked team in the world. They are a dominant soccer country. They've got Messi, who evidently is the world's best soccer player. And so my friend Deacon Eduardo, who's a very enthusiastic guy about everything, talked to me about this game, and he was trying to be gracious about it, but he made it pretty clear that the U.S. had no chance. So listen, I'm really not a soccer fan, but I am a smack talk fan. So I'd had some kind of fun with him over the last couple of days, even as I read that the chances of a U.S. victory were slim. Well, for some reason, I couldn't find the game. I guess I didn't have the channel it was on last night, but I did follow the score and woke up this morning and saw, 4-0. With Argentina with a win. That's a spanking. I mean, that's akin in football pretty much to about a 40-0 shellacking. 4-0. So I'm going to have to, eat a little crow with my friend Deacon Eduardo. But it's all good. It's all fun. And, come on. It's Argentina. The U.S. probably had no shot anyway. And I really don't care. But like I said, smack talk is fun nonetheless. But as he himself will admit, this is not going to help the ego of expat Argentinians here in the U.S. Yeah, even Pope Francis has made jokes about the egos of Argentinians who see themselves as the creme de la creme of South America. This Pope Francis evidently recently shared a joke, according to my friend Eduardo, how did the Argentinian commit suicide. He climbed up to the top of his ego and he jumped off. So kudos to your team there, Eduardo. The other thing being talked about, of course, is LeBron James' epic block of Andre Iguodala in the NBA Finals game 7. I know a lot of people are talking about Kyrie Irving's clutch 3, which was enormous, no doubt. I mean, without that clutch 3, who knows? Golden State maybe wins the NBA championship, and nobody's talking about the Cleveland's rehabilitation as a championship sports town. But that seeing still images of LeBron James' late-game block on the fast break of Iguodala, where James is, it looks like he's about, eyeball to rim, and his hand pinning the ball against the backboard. It is quite a sight to see, no doubt. And again, well-deserved for LeBron James. And then the other interesting sports thing that I saw this morning, this was from their website, Athlon Sports. They actually ranked all 128 Division I college football coaches. I mean, this is kind of the dog days. Baseball sort of in the middle of its grind. Football's not really started yet. NBA's over with. The Olympics aren't happening until a couple of months from now. So you got to come up with these sort of lists. And thankfully, Athlon did not do one of these annoying internet lists where you have to keep advancing the slide. Oh, I hate those things. Man, I won't do them anymore. Refuse. So they have listed out all 128 coaches. I was anxious, of course, to see where, as a Kentucky football fan, Mark Stoops ranked, given that his seat is a little warm this year. Wow. Ouch. 83rd they have him ranked out of 128. That's not good. Yeah. You're hoping to have a coach a little more highly rated than that. But just so you know, okay, I'm going to give you their top five coaches. And I think that's a pretty, they do a pretty good job here. Let's see. They have at number five, Bob Stoops at Oklahoma. I can see that. Number four, they've got Mark D'Antonio at Michigan State. No doubt he has done a great job there. And last year getting all the way to the semifinals. Number three, Jim Harbaugh, Michigan. That feels premature. I have no doubt he's doing a great job. And Michigan is ranked, I think, third in some polls preseason. But third for Jim Harbaugh already? I don't know. Number two, Urban Meyer, no doubt. And then clearly number one, Nick Saban for Alabama. So those are your top rankings anyway. We'll see if Mark Stoops can climb up anywhere into the stratosphere of his brother Bob before it's all over. Okay, we'll have to get to the What Were You Thinking nominees when we come back from the break, because we're about out of time for this section. Anyway, love your thoughts or comments. 573-4BREAD-4. Again, our question of the day, what is your favorite brand and flavor of donut and your beverage of choice? This is the Mike Allen Show. You're listening to Breadbox Media. Right at the bottom of the hour, back on the Mike Allen Show here on this Wednesday, June 22nd, the feast day of Saints Thomas More and John Fisher, martyrs for the faith, martyrs for marriage, martyrs for the papacy. Saints Thomas and John, pray for us. Question of the day, what is your favorite brand and flavor of donut, and what is your beverage of choice? 573-4BREAD-4. If you want to send us an email or a text, give us a call or send a text, 573-4BREAD-4, or you can email me, MikeAllenShow@gmail.com. A couple of other comments. Christy says, Shipley's in Houston, raspberry filled. Ooh, I used to be a big jelly donut guy back in the day, back when I was a kid. Now I just kind of prefer just good old glazed. I do kind of like those cinnamony cake donuts too, or the blueberry cake donuts. Yeah, now I'm starting to feel like Homer Simpson. Donuts. Carrie says Boston cream brand doesn't matter. So if you want to chime in on that, 573-4-BREAD-4, 573-4-BREAD-4, or you could email me, MikeAllenShow@gmail.com. Okay, we ran out of time. Last segment, let's get to it now. I know you wait for this every day. Our What Were You Thinking Awards of the Day, spanning the globe. Actually, usually just a couple of different websites, but spanning the globe to find examples of human imbecility at its finest. As we like to say, go dumb or go home. This from consumerist.com. Check out the arm on this USPS delivery guy. As it says here, it's been a while since we've seen a delivery person caught in the act of lobbing, tossing, or otherwise chucking a package instead of walking it to its intended destination and depositing it on, say, a porch. Today's featured sport in the delivery driver game's Ultimate Frisbee. Evidently, Reddit user Brent213, I guess that's his user ID, happens to have a surveillance camera, the bane of every delivery guy, that shows his driveway, which came in handy when he wanted to find out why his package from Amazon was delivered to the sidewalk outside his house instead of his doorstep. Turns out the driver was working on getting a nice top spin, perhaps to hone his ultimate frisbee skills. They actually posted a clip. I'm going to put this on the show's Facebook page. You're going to like this because they actually have footage of the guy flipping the package. Doesn't leave the mail truck. Flips it out onto the sidewalk. The good news is nothing was damaged in the throw, which isn't always the case. The box contained socks. Really, you go to Amazon to buy socks? I guess people are going to Amazon these days to buy just about everything. Number two nominee, we're going to give to Axe Throwing Club wants liquor license. Now, that's a headline you don't see every day. Organizers of a special axe throwing league in Canada say they'd like to make the experience even more fun by getting a license to serve alcohol. As the Toronto Star asked, what could possibly go wrong? The backyard axe throwing league brought in a safety expert to its six locations. I'm guessing the safety expert said, you know, it's not a good idea to throw axes. They evidently received glowing reviews on the safety to go ahead with the application for a liquor license. Reminds me of that story. I think I shared it before, maybe a throwback. What Were You Thinking? About the headline of an article. Oh, I need to see if I can find this again. Because just the headline, I mean, not the headline, the story was so short. And it just summed up what could go wrong. Here, I'm typing it up as we speak. What could go wrong with an axe throwing club? Here we go. This was from the 1993 Los Angeles Times. A man who was shot through the skull with an arrow by a friend trying to knock a fuel can off his head survived with no brain damage, doctors say. I'm guessing alcohol was involved in that as well. I'll take issues with a couple things from that line. He was shot through the skull with an arrow by a friend. That may raise some questions. Trying to knock a fuel can off his head survived with no brain damage, by which they mean no additional brain damage than he already had. Anyway, so my guess is when you add a liquor license to an axe throwing club, you're probably going to have similar stories. But our winner is going to go to a political candidate. Imagine that. Florida congressional candidate Greg Evers is going to win the What Were You Thinking Award. He went dumb and didn't go home by announcing an AR-15 giveaway after the Orlando massacre. Listen, listen, the Second Amendment, great, love it. It's has a place, should never be removed from the Constitution. But really, a Florida Republican state senator is giving away a custom-built semi-automatic rifle in a campaign Facebook contest a week after a gunman killed 49 people in Orlando, I think with that same type of weapon. He's running for 1st Congressional District Street and seat, and he announced a Homeland Defender giveaway contest to give residents of his district a chance to win a custom-built AR-15 semi-automatic rifle on Independence Day. You know, timing, my friend, timing. That would be like giving out a free baby alligator after the incident at Disney World. I mean, seriously? You're giving out whatever. So he gets the What Were You Thinking Award for the day. Congratulations to the aspiring Florida Republican state senator. Speaking of politics, noticed yesterday Donald Trump spoke to a group of evangelicals in New York City. Donald Trump, who has been trying to actively court the Christian vote, whether Catholic or evangelical, and has talked a little bit about his own Presbyterian faith, spoke yesterday to some evangelicals. This is what the Religion News Services reports. Donald Trump began his crucial meeting with nearly 1,000 Christian conservatives on Tuesday by telling them that he is a, quote, tremendous believer. I mean, would he be any other kind? I mean, he's huge, I tell you. He's huge. Believe me. He's a tremendous believer, and that rather than praying for all the nation's leaders, they should pray to get everybody out to vote for one specific person. And I'm going to guess, that one specific person is Donald J. Trump. Anyway, according to the headline here, I need to find out about what he says. I'm on your side, he said. I'm a tremendous believer, and we're going to straighten it out. You know, oftentimes in some of my rallies, he said, and I say in a joking fashion, but boy, do I mean it. We're going to be saying Merry Christmas again. I mean, you go to Macy's, you go to the department stores today, you don't see any Christmas signs. Now, I would say, does he think that Christians are really that dumb? But I think the answer is clearly yes. And unfortunately, in some cases, he may be right. But here's the thing that occurred to me, and this is what this reminded me of, this idea that I'm so on your side. I'm a tremendous believer. Because going into these sorts of meetings, Donald Trump meeting with evangelical conservatives, they're kind of feeling each other out, right? I mean, obviously, evangelicals are not going to vote for Hillary Clinton. A lot of Catholics are not going to vote for Hillary Clinton. I've told you myself, I could not vote for Hillary Clinton because of her all-in approach to pretty much unlimited, unrestricted abortion. Can't do it. Of course, where Donald is hoping is that, yes, even though he may not be a model believer, that he's better than the alternative and he's going to win over the evangelical. So they're kind of feeling each other out, you know. And the question is Donald Trump wants to know kind of, are you with me? I am with you. And the evangelicals are like thinking, perhaps, is he with us before we say we're with him? It made me think about this encounter in the book of Joshua. Joshua, who had succeeded Moses, who had been called to take Israel now into the promised land and to claim this promise from God against daunting odds. Joshua, before he goes to fight against the great walls of Jericho and this curious command from the Lord to march around the city without attacking it with weapons. Joshua, perhaps in a prayerful moment, when Joshua was by Jericho, he lifted up his eyes and looked, and behold, a man stood before him with his drawn sword in his hand. Joshua went to him and said to him, "Are you for us or for our adversaries?" And he said, "No, but as commander of the army of the Lord, I have now come." So, and I think maybe this has been attributed to Abraham Lincoln. The question is not so much, is God on my side? Any more than it is Trump on my side or am I on Trump's side? The right question to be asking is, as Joshua discovered, is not with God with me or is God with my enemies, but am I with God? That's the bigger question. And it's an important question. It's certainly an important question for any political candidate. It's important for any voter to ask. Not if God is with me or with my party, but are we with God? And the kind of vision of the common good, the dignity of every human person, that it's at the heart of my faith and as God has revealed. So make sure we ask the right questions. We'll be back in a minute. I'll give you this day in history info. On the other side of the break, this is the Mike Allen Show here on Breadbox Media. Minutes before the hour, you're back on the Mike Allen Show here on this Wednesday, the 22nd of June, the feast day of Saints Thomas More and Saint John Fisher. Both died within about 2 weeks of each other back in 1535, both beheaded by King Henry VIII, a time of great turmoil for the faith, and England has never recovered from that. We certainly pray for the day in which all the Christians in England will be one again, one in the unity of the church founded by Christ upon the apostles. Anyway, my question of the day, sort of superficial but fun, your favorite brand and flavor of donut, and what's your accompanying beverage of choice? 573-4-BREAD-4, 573-4-BREAD-4, or you can email us at mikeallenshow@gmail.com. Or you can also respond via Facebook or Twitter, Mike Allen Show, the handle. So besides this being the feast day, as I said, St. John Fisher martyred on this day, June 22nd. It would be 15 days later on July 6th, the same year that St. Thomas More was beheaded. You know, for St. Thomas More, who was in the Tower of London, I'm sure any faint hope that he would be spared faded after he heard of the execution of John Fisher, the Bishop of Rochester. I mean, if Henry VIII would execute a bishop, then what chance did More, a layman, have? But it also, I think, in many ways underscores the courage of More, that even though he knew the king wasn't fooling around, he continued to stand. And we'll talk a little bit more next hour about just what he stood against. And it wasn't just the king, by the way. Again, 573-4-BREAD-4 if you've got a comment or a question, or you can email me, mikeallenshow@gmail.com. So let's. What are some other things June 22nd on this day in history that have happened throughout the ages? Let's go back in time. 1633, Galileo forced to recant his Copernican views that the Earth orbits the Sun by the Pope. On October 31st, 1992, the Vatican, or the Pope, I think, I need to look on that because this is, I'm not sure about this internet source, but I think the church did acknowledge mistakes in the matter. Now, the interesting thing is, and I was turning to this, if you recall, a few weeks ago, I had as my guest on the program the sociologist and professor Rodney Stark from Baylor University, a non-Catholic who's written an excellent book called Bearing False Witness, Debunking Centuries of Anti-Catholic History. He deals with this whole Galileo incident, and particularly the old canard that the church is hostile to science. Yes, he says mistakes were made, but some of them were Galileo's mistakes, too. Evidently, he had quite the sizable ego, but he died a Catholic in good standing, under pretty cushy house arrest, continued to receive the sacraments, so take it with a grain of salt. On the happy birthday today, Kris Kristofferson, 80 years old today. who was really cut his teeth as a singer-songwriter before moving to Hollywood and taking up acting. But Kris Kristofferson has written a lot of great songs, some of them recorded by other people. He wrote Me and Bobby McGee, for example. And, of course, he wrote Sunday Morning Coming Down, which is my favorite Johnny Cash song. But Kristofferson wrote it and sang it first. In 1937, on this day, Joe Louis KO'd James J. Braddock in 18 rounds. Wow. I think he would say, well, this it says it at the end of Cinderella Man, one of my favorite movies, that Lewis called Braddock the most courageous man he ever fought. In 1940, on this day, the French had to sign their armistice 8 days after the Germans had overrun Paris. What a humiliating moment that would be, and one that Hitler took great delight in turning the knife on. Let's see, 1941, on this day, fateful mistake, Germany invaded the Soviet Union. You know, they had kind of agreed with each other when Germany invaded Poland. His avarice got the best of him, I guess. Happy birthday to Meryl Streep, one of really the great living actors in Hollywood, for sure. Let's see, Dan Brown, 52 years old. Sorry, Dan. The Wife of Jesus fragment has turned out to be a forgery. What will you do? I'm sure that won't stop you from writing your next fiction account based on that. And let's see, 1970 on this day, Richard Nixon signed a measure lowering the voting age to 18. That makes sense. I mean, if you're going to have people putting their life on the line defending this country, shouldn't they be able to vote? So kudos to President Richard Nixon for that move 46 years ago. Of course, he signed it. Others initiated the amendment. Anyway, so that's our This Day in History. If I'm forgetting one, you want to correct me, 573-4-BREAD-4, 573-4-BREAD-4. You can call or text, or you can email me, MikeAllenShow@gmail.com. As I told you earlier in the program, I had the opportunity yesterday to be a part of a graveside funeral service for a woman who had been a member of the Methodist Church, where I was pastor for 7 years before I became Catholic. I was really honored to be invited by the family to come and say some words at the graveside. Of course, the service presided by the Reverend Lynn Beach, who is currently the pastor of Park United Methodist Church here in Lexington, Kentucky, where I was pastor. So he did some readings and some prayers, and I had the opportunity to share a few words, which I was very, very glad to do, of course. You know, one of the things that when I met with the pastor of Park Church and with the deceased woman, Lana, her daughter, what I like to do is to try to find out information about them. And because you want to personalize the proclamation at the funeral, right? I mean, you're there to offer words of hope, comfort, and praise to God in the midst of that. The focus of the funeral, rightly understood, is not simply a walk down a sentimental lane with the memory of the deceased. It's to lift up the one word of hope, the victory of Jesus Christ and his resurrection over death. At the same time, that doesn't mean you don't talk about the deceased, but you always want to look at their life in light of the mysteries of Christ's redeeming work, his own death and resurrection, and try to tie it together. So, but I also always think it's important, because I think there's a purpose in a funeral as well to bring some sense of comfort to those who are grieving. Now, my friend who passed away, she had lived a long, long life, 96 years old. Pretty remarkable. But one of the things that when we sat down with her daughter, that the daughter brought, it was her mom's Bible, the Lina's Bible. And it was not a big Bible in terms of its proportions, width and length. But with all the things that she had stuffed between the pages of this Bible, the thing was, I'm not kidding you, it was 6 inches high with a rubber band around it. And there were all kind of things in there, prayers, little devotional pages from books that she had read over the years, pictures, a love letter from her late husband. Her husband died back in the 90s. as we were talking about it, that's one of the unfortunate things I think about the digital age is those type of simple storage methods of keeping memories alive, that's all going to be on a cloud somewhere, right? It's not going to be tangible like it is in that Bible that she brought. And looking through that, she began to share some of the things that were in her mom's Bible. And one was a little slip of paper where she had written a prayer out. Now, I don't know if she'd gotten it from somewhere and copied it down. It was, I thought it was a beautiful token and expression of her faith. It said, "Dear Father, grant that I will accept the change in my life without fear. I know you will lead me safely through all things." This is a woman who had known suffering in her life and had seen many changes. I mean, she was born in 1920, for heaven's sake. Imagine what she saw over the course and how much change, rapid fire change she saw. And yet she found her confidence and her faith in Christ. You know, I had not known her that well since I had left the church, of course. But she'd always struck me as somebody who had a pretty remarkable sense of interior peace. And for whatever reason, when I was thinking about the remarks, I was drawn to the idea of rest. In our tradition, certainly in the Christian tradition, death has been tended to call rest. You could think of our fathers in the faith, the Jews, who described death like this. And David rested with his father. Rest not just some sort of euphemism to cover up how hard death is, but death, even though it is the enemy Christ came to defeat, both on a physical level, it is a sort of death it is a rest because we cease from our physical striving that she had been doing for 96 years. But there's also that rest that we find, the hope of heaven, which is an eternal rest. That's why we pray for our beloved dead, eternal rest grant unto her, O Lord, and let perpetual light shine upon her. But the beautiful thing is that the rest that we experience, if God so wills for us and his desire for us is fulfilled, if we do enter into the joys of heaven, the rest we find there, we can actually receive a foretaste of now. This interior peace of having our lives entrusted into the goodness of God, as Jesus himself said, "Come to me, all you who labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest." So eternal rest, Lord, grant unto my friend Lina, and may we taste a bit of that even now. We'll be back with a new hour. This is the Mike Allen Show.